My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Entertainment Live on 1480 AM KPAX in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave, alongside Joseph, Jake, Trisha, Eric, and Kathleen. And this song is Star Trek Part 3.
What? No, this is Toby Keith courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue right here on KPHX 1480 AM Breakthrough Entertainment. Oh, yeah, because this is courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. Without the Red, White, and Blue, we wouldn't have this radio station.
That's right.
That is true. That is very true.
Very, very true. No question. That's a good song. I like Toby Keith. Yes. He had some restaurants that didn't quite work out, though.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened.
I like the restaurants. They were very good.
I think they've come and gone.
Yeah, they have. They had really good steaks. But
yeah,
let's switch gears. We had a great discussion about The Purge. Of course, we were having fun with that. But let's talk about a very serious subject right now. We have on the filmmaker of a new film that opened up yesterday here in Phoenix at the Harkins Theater, Shea 14. It's called The Witness, and we have on filmmaker James D. Solomon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. So now this is a documentary that looks into the mythic death and little-known life of Kitty Genovese. This is your directorial debut. You are a New York screenwriter. And so, of course, 50 years ago, the name Kitty Genovese became synonymous with urban apathy after 38 eyewitnesses did nothing while an attacker stabbed her to death on the street of New York City. So tell us a little bit, any other like basic information that we should know before we get into our discussion about this.
Sure. Well, you know, I think perhaps some of your listeners may be familiar already with the name Kitty Genovese. She was, as you rightly said, the New York Times reported in March 1964 that 38 people watched for more than a half hour as this 28-year-old woman was repeatedly attacked, murdered, and that none called the police. And her death helped lead to the 911 emergency system, to neighborhood watch groups, to Good Samaritan laws. It is taught, many of your listeners may have actually been taught about Kitty Genovese in an intro psych or sociology class, and some of your listeners may have actually just seen an episode of Girls a month ago, which portrayed the murder of Kitty Genovese. So she's arguably, if not the most, one of the most famous murder victims of the last half century, but 10 years ago, actually it's 2004 on the 40th anniversary, the New York Times, which broke the original story of 38 watched, no one helped, questioned whether their actual original account was accurate. And her younger brother, Bill Genovese, was propelled to find out for himself what actually happened. And the film, The Witness, which, as you said, it just opened up in town, tracks Bill Genovese's investigation over the course of 11 years as he tracks down the witnesses and finds out what actually happened that night.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. I so much remember that. You're right about the most famous, unfortunately, murder victim. I lived in L.A. at the time, and it was all over the news, and it got a lot of outrage, at least from how it was reported that, you know, this poor woman at age 28 just was viciously stabbed and no one did anything. And I remember the reaction at the time was just everyone was appalled. But so your movie takes everyone through what really happened that night, correct?
Well, you're right. What it actually does is it follows her younger brother, Bill Genovese, and Bill, who there was no one that was closer to Kitty than Bill, but it wasn't just the loss of his older sister that had such a profound effect on his life. It was that story, 38 watched and no one helped. So that so much was Bill affected that he not only needed to prove that he would have been one of the people who would have opened the window that night but would have gone down into the street, he needed to prove that he wouldn't be a bystander. And so he enlisted in the Marines, went to Vietnam, and while in Vietnam was severely injured and lost both legs.
Oh.
Because he was trying to prove in a way that he was not like one of the bystanders. So when the question of whether that story, the account that no one helped, was brought up in 2004, Bill needed to find out for himself what happened, because that story had not only impacted you in Los Angeles and all of us and 911, but it actually had a profound effect on his life, and he needed to find out for himself what actually happened. There, for your listeners who like Serial or Making a Murderer, The Jinx, the film has been very much compared to those projects. It is a true crime investigation, but it's also at its heart a sibling love story, a brother trying to reclaim his sister's life from her infamous death.
That sounds fascinating. Now, how did you get involved? I mean, passionate moment that you said, wow, this is something you want to do?
Well, I'm a screenwriter, as you pointed out at the outset, by profession, and I'm drawn to stories we think we know. The last film that I wrote was directed by Robert Redford, a movie called The Conspirator, about the story behind the story of the Lincoln assassination. And I did a project called The Bronx is Burning for ESPN about the Yankees in the late 1970s. So I'm drawn to these iconic characters and stories. And I was doing a screenplay for HBO based on the famous story of Kitty Genovese's murder. And at that time, I met Bill Genovese. When you meet Bill, instantly Kitty Genovese comes to life. Kitty is only known to all of us for the last 32 minutes of her life, or her death, essentially. And when you meet Bill, you begin to find out that she was this really compelling person, and that's part of what the film unravels, is who she was. Nothing came of that scripted HBO project. A few years later, when the New York Times questioned its original account and Bill decided he wanted to find out for himself, I thought it was much more interesting to document those who had actually lived the story rather than to write about them. And so that's how this film came about.
Wow. Now, I noticed that this is witness, and it is singular, not plural. But I do know that it's a staple of all psychology classes talking about diffusion of responsibility when you're in a group that, like, you know, they always tell you in healthcare, if you're going to have a heart attack, it's better to have it with just one other person there than to have it in amongst a large group. Because if you're in a large group, everybody thinks somebody else is going to do something about it and nobody acts. Versus if there's one person there, they feel like they need to take on that responsibility because no one else is there. So what I understand, I haven't seen the film yet, but I understand that there really weren't 37 or 38 people. Is that correct?
Well, first, to your point about the diffusion response, those psychological experiments were triggered by Kitty Genovese's murder.
I thought it might have been.
At 100%. In fact, the guy that told Bill Genovese, that's why they started exploring it, was because of his sister's murder. To your question, were there 38 watched? No, in fact, and this is one of the extraordinary things, and it's multiple reveals, one after another, after another, after another, that Bill Genovese comes across over the course of his 11 years that are documented in the film. And one of them is that the story of no one helping, is this the most iconic story of urban indifference and apathy, actually has a hero after all. In the middle of the night, when Kitty was in greatest harm, a young woman named Sophia Farrar raced out of her apartment, down a flight of stairs, still in her nightclothes, pushed her way outside into a darkened alley, ran down the darkened alley, and then pushed, having no idea who was out there, and pushed her way inside the vestibule where Kitty was dying and cradled Kitty as she died. Now, that part of the story has not been told, or wasn't told then. And so the story of no one helping actually has the most heroic person. And amazingly, the Genovese family, Bill and Kitty's brothers and her parents, did not know for a half century that Kitty actually died in the arms of a friend.
How beautiful is that?
That is. And James, in your opinion, how could this misreporting by a big news organization, LA Times?
Well, it's the New York Times.
New York Times.
No.
How's that possible? I mean, was it for sensationalism? Are they just, I was going to say incompetent. I guess I just did. But, how is that possible, have it so wrong?
Well, I suspect your listeners probably have their can point to a whole number of stories that have been misreported over time in recent memory. But to go back to what happened then, there is an expression. Journalists have this expression: some stories are too good to check. And this may have been one of those.
Wow.
And what one of the things that Bill Genovese does in the course of the film is to track down those who created the story, and including the editor, the then city editor, became the executive editor of the New York Times, Abe Rosenthal, who he speaks to. But he also speaks to Mike Wallace, who reported it for CBS National Radio.
Oh, wow.
Many perpetuated this story. And as I pointed out, girls a month ago did an episode based on that iconic story, and a month before that, Law and Order Special Victims Unit did an episode based on the iconic story. So some stories just perpetuate themselves.
Wow.
And never get checked. The movie, in many respects, is about the power and the impact of false narratives. All of us, all of your listeners, have heard something in the middle of the night and have created a story, and that story they've sort of allowed them to go back to sleep. It helps sometimes to create a narrative that allows you to get through a day. Or across 50 years, each of us has a photo that sits on our night table, and we've created a whole story around that photo. That story may not be true, but we've created one, and that sort of helps us, in a sense, to get through life. I think that's partly what happens. We create false narratives and we hold on to them, and they're powerful even if they're not true.
Wow. Well, I think this is incredible that you are following this pursuit of love, of Bill going to find out the truth in his sister's murder. And I think it's incredible to show that a young woman put herself at risk to go and try to save someone she didn't know, and to be there with her and to be able to be that comfort to her. I think that is more what our human nature should be, and probably is deep down, if you're not thinking about yourself as much as, you know, or that you think of others more than yourself.
Well, I appreciate you saying, you know, Bill Genovese is a hero and gave of himself ultimately for the country. I think Bill has said that on one day you're a hero and another day you're a coward and you're everything. And on that particular night, that story was reported and it became iconic because it reported 38 did nothing, when in point of fact, some people were heroic, some people were not. It was more like the way life is. And as one person says in the film, the journalist says to Bill, if the story had been more accurately reported, it would have been a 2 or 3 or 4 day story. It would not have been a 50-year story. And all to us on this call, we wouldn't be talking about her today.
Now, when you wrote this film, did you have any age group in mind? Certainly the younger people won't remember this, I don't think. The baby boomers, I believe, will, because it was so well known. Or did you try to attempt to make it so everyone, even though they weren't born yet, can learn, you know, the lessons from misreporting, integrity of professionalism, you know, in journalism, not being professional, and the power of basically, I don't want to say it like this, but, you know, storytelling, how it can just get all out of whack. And then the power of healing, I guess, in a way.
Well, it's such a good question. Listen, I do hope your listeners of all age will go see the film, and it's a really good question that you ask. I am a storyteller, but I was documenting someone's story, someone's narrative. Now, if you like Serial or Making a Murder or The Jinx, and I think those appeal to all ages, then this film would appeal to your listeners. It is that kind of film, but it's a film with a very central heart. It's her brother's, and it's her brother's pursuit. I think that there are certain stories, for whatever reason, that are evergreens that just never go away. Maybe they're, as I said, some stories are too good to check. Maybe some stories are too good to give up. And this one, the murder of Chidi Genovese, almost like a biblical parable, has held the interest of multiple generations. So just as you rightly said, it was for baby boomers, that's when the story broke a long time ago. Well, you know, girls, Lena Dunham is writing to a very much younger age, and her episode was called, it was the second to last episode of this past season, it's called Hello Kitty, based on the Chidi Genovese murder. Mm. So I think there's something about this particular subject matter that is compelling to multiple generations. What Bill Genovese does in the film is in many respects a coming-of-age film. He is going back to something that happened 50 years ago and trying to unravel the truth. And what he does is stunning to anybody who is interested in pursuit of the truth and what one human being is capable of doing.
Well, and I think as you said, this really affected his life on so many levels. Would he have done what he did that caused him to lose his limbs had he not been trying to prove that he was not going to be a bystander when someone was at risk? And would that have now, his knowledge now, would that have changed his behaviors back then? Who knows? But I really think that what I see when I see this picture of Kitty with those beautiful eyes, even though it's just a black and white picture that I see, I just see a beautiful young woman who was probably full of a lot of potential. And it saddens me that people heard her pleads for help. And you just mentioned 32 minutes that she was being attacked. Is that right? 32 minutes?
Well, that's the story, and that's the story that was told. That it did take place over a half hour, but she wasn't. I mean, when you see the film, you'll sort of begin to understand exactly how it was misreported. To your point about Kitty, all I need to tell you is she drove a red Fiat convertible.
Love it.
And immediately you get a sense of what kind of person she was. Kitty managed the bar. She had been married. She was gay. Met a woman. This is incredible. Met a woman by leaving a note on her door and telling her to be at a payphone at a certain point in time, and she would call her at that payphone. She was just very independent. She was a millennial. That's what she was. She was a millennial living in 1964.
Wow. Well, and
I'm gonna see this tonight.
Yeah, I want. I really want to see it. Wow. You know, I wish that we hadn't had so many movies to choose from, and that we only had time to see one. But I just really, you know, I think this is awesome that you're doing it. I also think it's somewhat of a commentary on the world in which we live now, that you would think that this would be a lesson learned, and yet we are a society who want to be entertained, want to be on the edge of our seats. And I don't know how many people really would want somebody that just gets up there and tells them the truth. They want it to be sensationalized a little bit, I think, and because that's what interests people. And I think sometimes the news industry becomes more of an entertainment industry. What do you think about that?
Well, let me just say to your point, I'm a screen. As I said, we talked about this. I'm a screenwriter, and I have never written a story or met a character as compelling as this story or the central character, Bill Genovese. And so, you know, there are so many scenes in the film that I don't nearly have the imagination to have written. That's and I say that because you are what your listeners may think the film is, and what it actually is. It is it is every bit as you would describe a thriller. It's done. It's true life, and some, as you know, true life writes better than fiction. And so, my job as a filmmaker was basically to tell the story that happened as it happened, and watch, and so the viewer can sort of be along for the journey as Bill discovers one thing after another thing after another thing after another thing. I do hope your listeners will go see it. It's 90 minutes long. It's not a huge investment of time, but it's, you know, everybody has limited time, as you rightly say. And I'd be fascinated to hear what your listeners think about it.
Well, I really truly think that this sounds like the most interesting movie of the weekend to me.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, so thank you again, filmmaker James D. Solomon, for joining us and telling us a little bit about The Witness. You know, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and happy 4th of July, and best of luck with this release.
To you and to your listeners, and thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for this, and this project just sounds phenomenal.
Yes. And again, the movie is playing exclusively at the Harkins Shea 14 here in Phoenix. And so we're going to take another quick break. And you were going to listen to Martina McBride singing Independence Day.
Woohoo!
Ooh.
My, it's not really, it's about Independence Day, but it's about women's independence. So, you know, we were talking about the abuse earlier. So
we were?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
We were.
A woman? Or
it was
the context
domestic
of the
abuse and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
In context.
Right.
And this is Breakthrough Entertainment Live on 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back. On Independence.